Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages.
And especially you, fat, sweaty wrestling fans. This bout has a 30-minute time limit.
This contest is set for one fall.
Seriously, why even say one fall? It's always one fall.
Oh, you didn't know?
Welcome to Shoot Radio, the only pro wrestling show that threatens its fans with figure five leg locks, triple axe handles, and large packages. Wait, what?
Woo, woo, woo! You know it!
Let's move on. Now introducing the tag team champions from the not-so-mean streets of suburban Toronto. This is The Chris. And his partner. And yes, I mean partner like that. From the well-landscaped subdivisions of suburban Chicago, it's Johnny P. Get ready, wrestling fans, to sit through this utterly ridiculous gimmick match known simply as Shoot Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is The Chris with installment number two of our fan interaction lumber shoots. We recorded everything originally thinking we're going to put it all together in one episode, but because we talked for a long time with both of the people that we did lumber shoot with, we decided to split it out into two episodes. So you'll hear Johnny and myself refer to this as the first lumber shoot, but you'll all know that it's the second one. So today we're talking with Taylor Mitchell, who's a good friend of Johnny's out in the Chicago area. And actually, that's wrong. Taylor, I believe, lives in the Indianapolis area. But Taylor had a lot of great opinions about some of the topics that we talked about on previous Shoot Radio episodes. And we actually strayed pretty far off topic in terms of not even talking about wrestling for a fair portion of this, but I left it in because it was pretty interesting. And I hope you enjoy it. One thing that I want to plug for Taylor is his blog. It's called Lucha Nerd's Blog, and it's at Lucha Nerd, luchanerd.blogspot.com. And it's also on Facebook at facebook.com/luchanerd. And as of the recording of this episode, he's got a great series going about Mr. WrestleMania, Shawn Michaels, as we lead up to WrestleMania. So check out luchanerd.blogspot.com. Okay, so we just finished talking with Trevor from the Toronto area, another great Canadian wrestling fan. And on the line now, we have Taylor Mitchell. Taylor, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So Taylor, let people know sort of how you got into wrestling, what your background is in terms of being a wrestling fan.
Okay. I started watching wrestling when I was pretty much in diapers. My older brother, Brian Mitchell, you guys might know him as Extreme. He watched it around that age for me, and I started watching it, and I've watched it ever since. So today I pretty much watch the WWE products and then also kind of dig Ring of Honor and the Chikara stuff too.
So what year would it have been that you, you know, that, or what era do you identify the most with? Because like myself, when I first got into wrestling when I was 12, 13, that was, you know, Hogan's first title reign in WWF. That's my frame of reference. What's that for you? Like, what's the...
Yeah. The first wrestler I related to was Hulk Hogan. Naturally, I was a young five-year-old kid watching him, but I think the era I most identify with where I was like really, really enthralled was actually what you guys have been referring to on the podcast is the lean years. And then going into the Attitude Era was really when I was old enough to like understand and comprehend what was going on.
Hey, props to you for actually listening to our show enough to know what we said lean years.
So are you a big T.L. Hopper fan?
Oh, yeah, no.
He likes Doink. He's a big Doink fan.
My favorite wrestler is probably Shawn Michaels.
He was one of the bright spots. We call it the lean years, but that was sort of the ascension of both Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart as singles wrestlers. So for all the, you know, maybe not so great stuff that surrounded them, there was some really significant and really good parts to that.
Yeah, Sean is one of those where it's just, he's obviously known as one of the best of all time. So I think it's a good choice there to say one of your favorites. So you wanted to talk about one of our episodes in particular, though, correct?
Yes, that is correct. The Jobbers episode.
All right. So you got a problem with the Jobbers episode?
Not a problem. I just had a few comments to make. One, the first thing, someone that I thought was kind of missed out on the episode, and then I guess the second thing being my personal opinion on the potential usage of Jobbers in the modern era.
Okay.
First thing, person that I thought was kind of missed, he had a brief mention, but was the 1-2-3 kid.
Okay.
I don't know how closely you guys were following the product, and I think it was 92 when he became the 1-2-3 kid, but I felt he had a hand in ushering in the diminishing of the usage of Jobbers. Because are you guys familiar with the big upset match he had with Razor Ramon?
Yeah, so he pinned him, hence getting the name 1-2-3 kid, right?
Right, yeah, because he appeared a few weeks before that with random names. I think he's like the Lightning Kid and Dynamite Flash, or I don't know what the names were, but so he was appearing as a jobber. His tights were a little bit more colorful than the typical generic jobber, but I mean, he had the look of one. He was very scrawny and small, and he, but I just remember, I mean, I was like, I think I was like 5 years old at the time, but I think I was watching Raw on tape recorded, because I was too, it was too late at night for me to stay up and watch it. So my mom recorded it for me, but I was watching it and, you know, I just thought it was a typical jobber match with Razor Ramon. And then I saw this guy get on the top rope and do a moonsault off the top rope and pin him 1-2-3. And it just blew my mind at the time. It's like, you never see that happen. You never see the jobber beat the superstar. And he sold it really well. He jumped up and down, high-fived the fans, and ran right out of the building.
It was pretty amazing. Was it on a pay-per-view, or was it on just regular a show?
I think it was just on Superstars.
It was on Monday Night Raw, I believe.
It was on like weekly television. It was not a
It wasn't. So I mean, that was pretty major. And was it live back then or no? Well, yeah, it wouldn't matter because
I don't know.
There was no internet. kind of irrelevant.
I think it was taped, but yeah,
it was irrelevant.
It wasn't as a big as stark a contrast.
But it was a big deal, and I do remember that. And I remember I actually was a fan of that happening because I was like, this is pretty fucking cool. This is like a little bit revolutionary to have a little guy, especially in what has always been known as the land of Titans, you know, pun intended there. But and have this guy win against a big dude too. And it was pretty major. So I agree with you on that.
And that's one thing that I've never heard Razor Ramon or Scott Hall really getting credit for. If you look at his career, he's never been somebody that makes a, or at least in terms of a fan's perspective, like he's always somebody that seems to be really okay with putting other people over.
Yeah.
And doesn't seem to have a big ego about, well, this, you know, I'm 6'7", 275 pounds legit. Why would I ever lose to a guy that's 5'0", 120 pounds?
Well, if you put people over, they become your friends, and friends give you drugs. So there you go.
I remember seeing an interview with Scott Hall from a few years ago, and he had an interesting remark. He was basically saying that he was never what he called a belt mark, and the quote I remember was, he's like, don't offer me the title and $100,000 a year. Beat me every night and pay me $1 million the quote I remember. And I really thought that was kind of cool that he had that perspective.
Yeah.
I thought he did an awesome job selling it too. Like, you go back and watch the match, like throughout the match, he's just tossing around, acting like the cocky heel that thinks he's going to win anyways. And then the underdog pulls it off and he freaks out afterwards. It was just, it's still a cool moment now. Like, I think it still holds up to today. Like, has a big upset.
Do you think
that was a star-making moment? Sorry, Johnny. Go ahead.
No, sorry, no problem. Do you think something like that could ever happen in the modern day?
I don't know. I think last year Santino Marella wrestled in the Elimination Chamber, and therefore, like, I mean, nobody knew. Nobody thought he was going to win it by any means. But leading up to it, I think they did some pretty cool underdog things with him that it seemed like. I think if they would have kept going in that aspect, he could have been then taken as a serious wrestler if they wanted to go that route.
Well, he was the last elimination in the Royal Rumble a few years ago. And I remember, like, I mean, that was that was a mark out moment for me, because I remember in that Royal Rumble, I think it was 2 years ago, he rolled out under the bottom rope, and I remember thinking in the back of my mind, oh, he was never really eliminated, and then you didn't see him for 20 minutes, and then right before, I believe it was Alberto Del Rio won that year, he came into the ring and put the Cobra on, and I remember I was a fan at that moment, a total mark, thinking, holy crap, like Santino Marella could win the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, I didn't like that at all when that was happening. I'm like, I don't like dislike Santino. He's comic relief. He's funny, but I hate when he basically, you know, he's had how many titles now? Like 3 different titles, I think. It's pretty crazy, and it's the typical kind of goofball moves. He's not really a jobber. I get what you're saying, Taylor, with it's like, you know, that was your comparison with him, but he's not really, I mean, again, we don't really have true jobbers anymore.
In today's paradigm, he's a jobber.
You think so? He's held like 3 belts. He's had the U.S. title. Has he had the Intercontinental title?
Yeah, he had when he first debuted, I think.
Yeah, the prestigious U.S. and Intercontinental titles.
Did he ever have a European title if that was still around?
I think he had the tag titles, though, with Vladimir Kozlov.
Yeah. But those titles are essentially manure shovels.
Oh, I mean, come on.
In 2012, I'm sorry, the U.S. title and the Intercontinental title mean nothing. So I don't think
you don't like the U.S. title because you're Canadian.
Yeah.
Yeah. Caught.
Guilty.
This is a shoot interview on Shoot Radio. No, but
In today's paradigm, you know, Santino's a jobber because he's gotten over based on his personality and the comic relief that he brings, because he's a guy that he's Teflon. I mean, you could beat Santino a million times and it doesn't matter. People are still reacting to him because of the character that he brings into the ring that people find entertaining.
But jobbers aren't supposed to win, and he wins all the time.
He does not win
yes,
all the time.
Yes, he does. He puts the fucking Cobra on because it's one of those, it's like, you know, now that Raw's 3 hours, of course, so you'll throw him in the middle to kind of keep the crowd going, keep the viewers watching, do the Cobra, actually take out somebody who
But who does he beat? Friggin' Alex Rodriguez. That's like, you know, Horowitz beating Steve Lombardi.
I bet you we can look back and I bet we've seen Santino possibly beat like Miz or Ziggler, guys he shouldn't be beating. I'm just guessing. I know he's beaten, you know, guys he definitely shouldn't have, because he is filling a certain role in that TV show. So I really don't consider him a jobber by any means. A jobber is somebody on this Saturday morning program that you don't even know the name of because you shouldn't know his name. Santino is, you know, multiple time champion.
Well, he's what I would call, because even back in the 80s, you had jobbers, and then the term I've heard is jobber to the stars. And Santino, I would consider in today's, I keep saying this phrase, but today's paradigm, I would consider him a jobber to the stars. No, he's not a Stan Stansky that Ryback's going to beat in 5 seconds and you're never going to see again. But he's the guy that'll, you know, when he's in a match against somebody on his tier, he'll tend to win. But every once in a while, you'll throw out and have him demolished by somebody in that top tier.
Yeah, he's kind of like maybe the modern day, like Coco Beware, like... he was the lower card kind of guy, and he beat jobbers here and there. But when he came to him wrestling an upper tier guy, he'd always lose.
I think that's
a really good comparison.
That's pretty good. Because he's funny and he's got like a, you know, a gimmick, and I could agree with that.
Cobra, so, parrot, you know.
He's jobbing, but he's not a jobber, and he's still going to get his own action figure at the end of the day.
Yeah. It is you know, the Birdman, but his finish is called the Ghostbuster. I still want that explained.
Is that because he's dead now?
Pardon me?
Is that because he's dead now?
He's not dead.
Oh,
the parrot's
Frankie's dead.
Oh, that's not nice.
Well, it's,
no, but
call life.
That's a good transition though into the next topic.
Oh, are you running the fucking show? Are you?
Oh, yeah.
You know what?
It's the lumber suit.
Yeah, you are the Big Show. Earlier, Chris was like, what's his Skype ID? I'm like, I'm sure it's Big Show Fan 3. And you really are. You're running the show. You're booking this episode, aren't you?
The 03 was the funniest part of that.
Oh, yeah. Had to do that.
So somebody took Big Show Fan.
It's the comedic.
Oh, man.
You got it. The comedic rule of threes, too. You got it. It's just three's funny. So what's your next topic? Jobbers or no?
Huh?
Still doing jobbers?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you guys in the episode were talking a lot about whether you thought jobbers could be used today and you guys are both kind of on either side of it. And I think they can, though. In my personal opinion, I think they can be. Now, especially with the three-hour Raws, I don't think that you can fill a whole episode with superstars versus jobbers, but it was really interesting in that episode that you guys – I think you guys were saying it was in April. I just recently listened to the episode to study up on it. But
yeah. They're timeless. Yeah. They're timeless. In fact, they're so timeless that I don't even remember what side of the coin I was on when it came to jobbers.
You were very anti-jobbers.
Oh, yeah. Fuck those guys.
No, but I think you guys were saying it was in April, and it was like Ryback was first debuting, and he was beating jobbers every week, and you guys were talking about whether or not they could work. Well, now, I mean, it's November of 2012, and Ryback has main evented the last two pay-per-views, and he's scheduled to main event the next one.
All right. Let's cut this guy's mic.
No. You're welcome back anytime.
I don't like where he's going with this one right now.
No, hold on, though. By no means do I think Ryback is ready to take the ball and run with it and take out John Cena for number one spot, but I think him taking out jobbers every week helped get him over. I mean, originally when he debuted, there were Goldberg chants. People didn't like him. But now, I mean, he's way over at the fan center in attendance, especially kids. I mean, the Feed Me More thing, when I first heard it, I thought that was the lamest and dumbest catchphrase I've heard in recent times. But, I mean, the kids are loving it.
Well, okay. Yeah. So let's put some things in perspective, too, just because we're going to talk about – you know, you mentioned roughly April. So we're talking April 2012. I just want to throw this out there for people to understand kind of the time frame. And then Ryback has ascended to, some main events and pay-per-views. And we're now in November 2012. And I want to tell you that you're right. He has definitely gotten extremely over. But it's, in my opinion, a lot more due to the fact that he created that ridiculous catchphrase and they shoved it down our throats, because most of the people that are watching wrestling are just going to repeat anything. I mean, look at the what chants that have still gone on all this time. So you say it enough times, you put your arms down in conjunction with, as you say it, feed me more, and the crowd's going to start saying it. He could have been beating jobbers. He could have been beating regular superstars. I don't think jobbers really put him over. And really, it was the chance and it was power moves putting him over, in my opinion.
But I think it's a combination, because I think the one thing that him fighting these, you know, little buggy whip potbelly jobbers did was it got over his size. I think that was the most important aspect of him beating up jobbers, because if he was out there fighting people that were of a similar size every week, and you saw it one week on Raw when he fought
like Tensai or something.
Tensai, and he couldn't pick him up for his move.
Yeah, it was awesome.
That almost, that was in danger of killing all his momentum.
Well, luckily for him, Tensai is the least over wrestler there is. And so he could have easily fell on his ass, tried it three more fucking times until he succeeded. And it's still like, oh, feed me more. All right.
No, but I think it also got over his offense, though. Because, I mean, another guy you can mention of present day is Damian Sandow. He debuted wrestling jobbers, not as frequently and for a long period of time as Ryback, but he wrestled some jobbers and then eventually moved on to the jobber superstars like the JTGs and Kurt Hawkins. And I mean, he's an upper tier mid-carder now. I think the benefit, though, to wrestling the jobbers is it got over their offense, so fans became familiar with what their offensive moves were. So then when they're now wrestling the John Cenas and the CM Punks and those kind of guys, you see it in the match and it tells the story of, okay, well, when he sets up this move, it looks like this, or they're going to counter with this move because they did their homework and they saw him wrestle those jobbers, and they see it now. Because you think about some wrestlers now that could benefit from wrestling jobbers. Heath Slater is one guy, and not that I like Heath Slater at all. He drives me nuts, but I don't know what his moves are. I don't know. I think he's done like 12 moves that could potentially be his finishing move. I don't know, because he's constantly getting jobbed out and squashed. But if he's out there doing a stupid one-man band gimmick, now it's the three-man band gimmick or whatever. But if he's out there doing that and I knew what his signature moves were and I knew what his finishing moves were, then I would understand more when he's wrestling other guys what those moves were, and I'd be prepared for what's happening now or how are they going to counter this move. Or
you know what, I'm gonna stop you right now. I'm talking now, Chris. I got something to say to this guy. First off, you mentioned what's happening now. Great show. Basically, in the same thing you said about Ryback, you're saying about Damian Sandow, and I'm going to disagree on both accounts. Damian Sandow got over because of his mic skills. Clearly, he is great on the mic, and he does that kind of, you know, the genius Lanny Poffo kind of style of, I'm better than you. CM Punk did that for a long time. You know, I'm better than you, and let me educate the unwashed masses. Jericho did that kind of stuff, all of that. I don't think it was due to him beating up jobbers and then, like, the next tier up jobbers. I just don't think – I get what you're basically trying to argue for the point of why jobbers are still a useful booking idea, right?
Yeah.
I just don't think it's needed. I think mic skills – I think stupid chants, I think stupid hand gestures that you make the crowd do, and, you know, this repetitiveness that people are just, that's Raw's 3 hours, but there's still like no additional matches than when it was 2 hours. It's just all about just getting these ideas in people's heads. The announcers do it. They drill it in. A new t-shirt comes out. They drill in a phrase, you know, and that's really all you need. You don't need the jobbers to put people over.
Taylor, I think you made a really good point about establishing, you used Damian Sandow as your example, but establishing the offense. Because one thing that, I mean, if you look back to the 80s, they had a way bigger roster in the 80s, and it was still on weekly television. It was primarily star versus jobber matches. And I think, I'll say it again, you made a really good point about establishing the offense, because when you're having superstar versus superstar, you want to make sure that both guys end up looking good in some way. And what that tends to do in today's environment is you get this parity booking where, yeah, one guy will win, but then the other guy gets all his heat back right away. When you have a tier like that, when it's clearly, you know, a jobber versus a star, you can book completely inequitable matches, and you can have the announcers do nothing but talk about the offense, because then when you get into a program where it's a star versus a star, the announcers can then just say the name of the move and the audience is educated on what it was, because they've seen King Kong Bundy do the avalanche 5,000 times to Ivan McDonald and Van Van Horn.
Well, it's character development. You know, it was what you're saying is that we've developed these two personalities, two characters. So when they finally clash, it's a bigger deal if they did it on day one.
And exactly. And then when, you know, the announcers can spend more time talking about the specifics of the match without having to describe the offense in a superstar versus superstar environment, you know, it's just sort of the long-term plan. By having established that with your audience, you can have, you know, a Jim Ross or a Michael Cole say, oh, he gave him the whatever. And the audience is educated to knowing, and they know how to react, and they know, okay, this is a finisher versus a transitional move.
It doesn't happen anymore. This is ADD pro wrestling. We have pay-per-views every month.
You're factually incorrect. Ryback's
he's, you say a classic example or the example modern day. There's not other ones you can really reference.
No, he's a classic throwback. But my counter argument to you, Johnny, would be the, when you have, if you just have superstar versus superstar, like, I don't know, just throw two names out there, Kofi Kingston and Ryback. If you're having those two wrestle, then the spotlight's not on Ryback, so the fans don't know what he's chanting or whatever. So then you have fans chanting, boom, 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 feed me more. Like, it's just, when you have a superstar versus a jobber, the spotlight's on that one superstar. What are they going to do? Like, how am I going to get behind this guy or hate this guy?
Really a good example. I mean, because you've built up Ryback. So Kofi Kingston against, you know, some random heel, say like The Miz or something.
The reason why I say
that, because not to try to, you know, poke holes in argument, but we've built up Ryback, and we saw how the jobber or a chant or all these things work together to help get him over. But normally on a week to week basis, these Raw episodes, and I'm not even talking about SmackDown or other shows, because it's pretty much recaps or just storylines repackaged. Week to week, Raw to Raw, it's in preparation for the next pay-per-view. It's not about character development. It's not about getting guys over long term. It is about let's keep it moving. You know, it's just let's go to the next one, next feud. And it's I mean, you know this because on the Monday after a pay-per-view, they're already booking the next pay-per-view on TV. All right, new feuds. It's like a new level in a video game. Like, all right, let's start from scratch again. Now who do I have? Oh, you interfered in my match. Looks like we got a feud. And there
the
was no...
pay-per-view numbers are the lowest that they've been in over a decade.
I agree. And
guess what? We made a podcast about wrestling, though, so there's still some popularity, though.
There is, but I think the reason why pay-per-views are so low, because, I mean, I've been a fan of the WWE since, like, the early 90s, and I only buy, like, 3 or 4 pay-per-views a year, and that's only if my friends come over and chip in on the money, because I don't – those feuds, I see them all the time. Like, just a few weeks ago, John Cena and CM Punk wrestled in the main event of Monday Night Raw right before Survivor Series. It wasn't advertised prior to that episode, and it was just – thrown away for free on TV. And like back in the day, you would never see Hulk Hogan versus Macho Man Randy Savage on Superstars.
But never see Hulk Hogan versus anybody on Superstars.
Yeah, but
right.
when those
so
matches
when
are
on pay-per-view, it was special and you wanted to get that pay-per-view. So like, and I think
they still are special because they're 20-minute matches, whereas on Raw, they're going to be 5-6-minute matches that generally end in like a DQ or a schmoz, somebody running in, somebody doing whatever. There's always some kind of like catch. And even when
and
it's
that's because they feel the need to do this parody booking to protect these guys.
Well, yeah, because all you have is 3 weeks to build up to the big culmination at the next pay-per-view. And some of them carry over month to month, like Cena and CM Punk have kind of been off and on as an ongoing thing modern day. But a lot of them really do go month to month. Like, look at, I'm not a Randy Orton fan by any means, don't like him, but it seems like every pay-per-view he's got a new feud. It just seems like he keeps going on and on with somebody. And because they know he gets over with the fans, he's already over. So let's go ahead and build up a heel to fight him. And it's like every month is somebody new. And it's this ADD style that doesn't normally work with jobbers. It happens with Ryback, but you're right. It's an anomaly. It's not the norm.
And it's kind of we're kind of dovetailing into a separate topic in so much as in my opinion, there's just too many pay-per-views. Like a pay-per-view a month is too many.
It's been that way for 10 years at least.
Right. And it's been pay-per-views have been of decreasing relevance.
And guess what's been increasing in the amount of times people stream it online for free at questionable websites, just like why
exactly.
Album sales have gone down. It's not because, you know, bands all of a sudden suck. Well, excuse
yeah,
me there.
You wanna go there?
But you know what I mean though. It's other forms of things, just like with, you know, radio and people using iPods. There's more behind the numbers than the product. I just want to say that because I really don't think the product today is worse than it was 5 years ago. It's better in my opinion. 5 years ago, you're not going to have CM Punk and Daniel Bryan getting the airtime that, you know, or the equivalent that there was 5 years ago, you know, getting
I disagree with, I mean, 5 years ago, well, a little more.
Yeah.
Than
Jeff Hardy. Is that what you're going to say? You know, I mean,
well, I mean, okay. I'll go 8 years ago. I mean, you look at the talent on that roster. You had Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit, Kurt Angle, Edge. I mean, the list went on and on. You look at today and the quality of the product. I mean, I don't think you can compare. You've got a few standouts like CM Punk. I mean, I wish I could, you know, just doing fantasy booker. I mean, I think CM Punk is the most outstanding talent of the past 10 years, and he's stuck in an era where he's got very little outlet for the talent that he has in terms of opponents.
I totally disagree.
He's making the most of it, but
I disagree. You've got Daniel Bryan is what, about 5'6", great wrestler. And, it's still a very kind of, new concept to have him, I think, battling for a world title or a WWE title. And that's a good thing.
When's the last time Daniel Bryan and CM Punk have had any interaction?
6 months ago, maybe. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, you know, you can't have that going. It's probably going to be like the big feud in a year that's going to be high main eventing pay-per-views, you know? But you've got these guys. You got Bryan. You got Punk. You got Ziggler, who's great on the mic and great in the ring. There's other ones, too. Like, you know, Kingston has great ring skills. Mike's got to work on it. Miz is better on the mic, not so great in the ring. But you've had these potential guys. And I get what you're saying about the talent 8 years ago, but you know, with Kurt Angle, Guerrero, that kind of thing. But you still had moments of Raw that sucked, and you still had
Absolutely.
Moments that were good. So, and you had pay-per-views that sucked, and pay-per-views that were good, and you had parts of pay-per-views that sucked. So, I mean, it, to me, it's all the same. It's kind of like with, that's wrestling. As a wrestling fan, you've seen the ups and downs, and I think we've talked about it before where you happen to remember the good times and don't always remember the bad ones, as in like, oh, I remember this era. This era was the best of wrestling. And it's like, you know, you can name five shitty guys that were that. Like, oh, I don't really remember those guys. Of course not. You remember the good times.
I think that's the Attitude Era you're speaking about. People always talk about how great the Attitude Era was, but they fail to mention the sexual chocolates and Mae Young giving birth to a hand and all those other stupid things that happened back then.
Yeah.
Well, it's the classic cliche. I mean, when you've got a hot product, you know, it's kind of, you know, a rising tide raises all boats. But when you've got a lukewarm product like you have today, it's a much more uphill battle. But I mean, the one thing that stands out to me in terms of evidence that they're not generating money-making stars like they did 8 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, is when they need a big number for a pay-per-view or a WrestleMania, who are they bringing back? They're bringing back The Rock. Guys, they're bringing back Steve Austin. You didn't see that in those prior eras where they were manufacturing stars.
I can see that, you know, but they did bring out random celebrities to help out. I mean,
they've done that for 30 years.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, there's always been help when needed. If you need help booking and want to get a bigger draw. So but I don't.
Last year. Sorry, Johnny.
Go ahead. You're up.
So like last year, I believe, was the highest grossing WrestleMania ever. I don't think it would have come close if they hadn't brought back The Rock.
Of course, that was a big deal. So is Undertaker every year is always a big deal. There's been times where Austin came back after being gone for a while. How many times did Shawn Michaels come back after retiring or quitting? That kind of just happens all the time. I don't think it's just a modern era of we better bring back the old guys to get the buy rates up. That always happens. There's always how many times they bring back freaking Hulk Hogan, you know? And it's just that kind of stuff always happens. I get what you're saying with, you know, we've kind of evolved into this, you know, modern era versus 5 years ago, 10 years ago kind of thing. But I just think there's been ups and downs at all times. And Taylor, you said it yourself, Mae Young, sexual chocolate, all these goofy things that happened back then. Yeah. There was shitty parts. Road Dogg was the worst back then. I hated him, you know, but everyone loves DX, thinks it's the greatest thing in the world. But yet one of their main guys on the mic is the worst wrestler ever. And, you know, it just, there was ups and downs in every era. And this is no different modern day, in my opinion.
Right. But I like to argue that back within, like back in the jobber era, I guess you can refer to it as when those wrestlers did finally meet on pay-per-view, and of course there's less pay-per-views at the time, but it was really something special. Like, I think you look at those early Survivor Series, the first few Survivor Series, like, they still hold today. Like, I still enjoy watching those. And those were, they drew fans in a lot because fans were like, okay, so we're watching Superstars, we're watching Wrestling Challenge, you know, Saturday Night Main Event here or there, we'll see Superstars wrestle Superstars. But here you've got 5-on-5, five Superstars versus five Superstars. How are they going to interact with each other? Like, you get to see Jake the Snake wrestle Dusty Rhodes, or you get to see, you know, those things that you don't normally see.
Yeah.
So it drew fans in.
I agree. It was a big deal because, you know, the modern day equivalent is you see those wrestlers all the time teaming up in random tag matches they have no business being in because you need to further this very quick, again, ADD storyline. So it's like, all right, let's match up two random faces, two random heels, and that way they'll fight some of the time, but not the other time, and that'll set up nicely because we got the pay-per-view next week. And so you're right. It's not as big of a deal when you see five guys that have no connection whatsoever having to team up. But
and
again,
sometimes it's even worse than that, though, because one of the biggest things that drives me nuts about today's booking is when they throw away a first time ever matchup on TV with no prior advertising and just like, oh, I mean, for lack of a better example, I know they've wrestled plenty of times on pay-per-view previously, but a few weeks ago they threw Wade Barrett and Randy Orton in a match together when they weren't feuding before. And, you know, Wade Barrett's trying to get on the rise again. Randy Orton beat him cleanly. And, like, it was just dumb. Like, why did they throw that away? There's no build up to that feud at all.
But that's
like,
been
a pay-per-view feud.
That's been happening for 10 years, though. I mean, that's, you know,
and Chris. That's more easily explainable because when you look back sort of you know, mid-90s and prior, television ratings really weren't, they weren't tied to, in the case of the WWF, they weren't tied to their revenue to the nearly the extent they were today. I mean, they saw, it was still the old mindset where, you know, you go back to the 70s and 80s, the television was meant to generate interest so people would come to the house show, which was generally, you know, up in, for the 70s and 80s anyway, that wasn't available anywhere. It was, if you wanted to see the big grudge match, you had to, you couldn't watch it on TV. You had to get off the couch, go to the arena and buy a ticket. Whereas as it's evolved now, the WWF or WWE, I should say, they make huge money just by handpicking their advertisers. That's why Raw has gone from 2 hours to 3 hours. So I totally agree with you from a storyline, continuity, you know, quality of storytelling aspect, but I can, it, from a business sense, I, even though I don't like it, I can understand why they would give away a match like that on TV, why that's why they're more apt to do that now, because I think they can, well, they need to have proof of their ratings history in order to command the premium advertising rates that they do.
Well, you want to make every Raw special, and they try to do that. Even the Raws that when you're done watching, you go, wow, that sucked. You could still tell they did something in the show to try to make it stand out, whether it was a guest host or they used to do guest, what is GMs or whatever. They used to remember that they'd bring in actors and stuff. Or they're like, oh, this is the 1,000th episode or 12. This is the draft episode. Oh, this is the one where we're going to, and there's always something they throw out there because they want to make it feel like it is special. It's still pushing the next storyline that helps you want to buy the pay-per-view. But I, like you said, Chris, they make a shit ton of money on just those episodes. And, you know, they're bringing in these other new mediums such as Twitter and Facebook, and those are also revenue generating as well, because you could have products be talked about in there, of course. And it's this machine that pay-per-view buy rates are one part of it, but it's really not the be-all, end-all by any means. And they probably figured it out. They figured, you know what? A lot of people are watching this shit streaming online for free anyway. So screw it. Whatever. It is what it is. We'll try to sell as many as we can. We'll raise the price anyway. If you want to watch the HD version, it's now like $60, you know, a pay-per-view. But they realize that Raw, especially being 3 hours at the current moment, does generate a lot of money. So they got to have those kind of matches. They got to say, coming up tonight, oh my God, we've got a championship, man. Whatever, you know, where we got Punk and Cena and Ziggler, all these big name guys, they got to give them their matches on Raw. It has to happen. Whether it ends in a DQ or a run-in or whatever, oh, it doesn't matter. They've got to have those guys going at it and not have the build-up. Ryback, again, different situation. It was a test. Did it work? I don't know yet. We don't know if it really worked.
It's
over.
A work in progress.
He's over, unbelievably, he's over, no question. But is he over because he repeats the same stupid phrase over and over again? Maybe. I guess they're still going to hear Goldberg chant at some point. It's going to happen again. It wasn't that long ago they were saying him. So you're right. It's a work in progress. We'll have to see. Still Skip Sheffield to me.
But I'm not saying like they should just change the format and go to all jobbers versus superstars. I understand the whole ratings thing, but advertise these things. If you're gonna have an Intercontinental title match on Monday Night Raw, I mean, they are using these media forms, Tout and Twitter and Facebook and all these things. Like, advertise it on that prior to then, so the fans can say, oh my gosh, so, you know, Miz or whoever's challenge for the Intercontinental title, I'm going to tune into that. But they only mention it on the episode.
Like, so after you're watching it already. Yeah.
That presupposes that they know ahead of time that those matches are going to happen. I don't think, you know, more than any other time in history, I think plans get changed so much just because there's so much TV to write. So many different factors contribute in terms of who can actually make it to a show versus not make it to a show. I don't think that they have on a day-to-day basis. And I've heard from, you know, in interviews from former writers and stuff like that, like, they'll show up to the show and somebody either in a head writer position, like a, you know, until recently, Brian Gewirtz or a Michael Hayes or even Vince McMahon will just show up and autonomously essentially rewrite the show. Like I heard an interview with, I believe it was Dave Lagana saying that, you know, they would have 3 weeks of television written and then they'd get to the arena and they'd be writing, they'd get these notes from the production team compelling them to change things. And they would be rewriting a storyline at 9 o'clock that had to air at 9:30.
Yeah. I totally believe that. I've read some similar kind of things. It's a very, almost not quite improv, but pretty close to it, where it's these rewrites and these changes. And there's probably a lot of factors. I do think that, the writing team looks at things online and what people are saying, and they'd still try to have surprises. If you really look at what a lot of people are, like these predictions, people always say, oh, this should happen and this will happen, this will happen. And most people are wrong. And you have to wonder, did they actually affect? I always wondered, did they affect the outcome when they say certain things are going to, oh, it's going to Undertaker's coming back tonight. You know, if there's some like, you know, vignette or whatever, they're showing like a date on the screen and it's like all graveyard and creepy. It's like, oh, it's Undertaker, obvious Undertaker, obvious Undertaker. And maybe it was, and then they changed it to something else. So I kind of like that aspect of it. I think it's kind of cool. And I also like when mistakes happen. Like there was the one, I think it was a pay-per-view where a Big Show stepped on a table. And you know what? Maybe I could be marking out and it was planned, but to me it looked like an accident where he didn't realize there was a table underneath him and he stepped down off the ring, went right through this, of course, weak-ass table, and it was actually a tables match where he lost the match. And it seemed like, oh, my God, he really fucked up. And yeah. I love when that kind of stuff happened. Not like injury fuck-ups, obviously, but like when it's stuff like that, it cracks me up because it's like, oh, man, I want to see this scramble backstage and what's happening. So there is some kind of elements of surprise that still goes on. And there's still, I don't really know how it, you know, connects to the whole jobbers discussion, but the idea of, you know, booking and what they're doing modern day versus 20 years ago. And it's a huge difference. And my point earlier was, you know, Chris, you mentioned about this huge talent pool that we had, you know, almost 10 years ago, and then 8 years ago. And that was still the same as it was now, as far as booking though. You didn't have the social media, of course, but you still had the lack of jobbers and pay-per-views every month. So I don't see a change really in that at all.
Well, but at the time, sorry, I keep cutting you off.
No, you did. I'm pretty much done. I'm just.
At the time, they were also taking the brand split a lot more seriously. So you had Raw specific pay-per-views and SmackDown specific pay-per-views. So you had the 2 months to build up storylines and feuds, as opposed to the 4 week or in sometimes even 3 week cycle like you do now. And they'd have the dual branded pay-per-views. They'd basically do the big four: WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Royal Rumble, and Survivor Series, where you'd get both brands on one. But they've really, the brand split essentially means nothing anymore.
Well, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a bad thing because you've got, I think that contributes to the overexposure. Now again, there may be business reasons, you know, I mean, I'm sure, you know, without knowing with certainty, but I'd be surprised if it wasn't the case that they're looking at the ratings on SmackDown versus the ratings on Raw and thinking, okay, well, we need to have, you know, John Cena on as many shows as we can because that's what brings in numbers.
Of course.
But from a purely, you know, as a fan, in terms of the way that the storylines are presented and the way that storylines can percolate and evolve, I think the brand split, when they took it seriously, had it the output was better storylines.
Well, the talent pool has been depleted, obviously, and they're not bringing up, and yeah, they bring up, you know, new wrestlers here and there and stuff like that, but you don't see a lot of like free agents and that kind of thing coming in, because they know that is one brand now. They don't need to worry about it. But if you were to, let's say they were to start it up again, you know, it'd be a big deal because you'd really have to try hard to make the SmackDown brand or whatever other brand they want to call it, you know, feasible on its own. And even when they had the split as far back as maybe just what, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, maybe 3, 4 years ago, we'll say it was still split up. You know, it wasn't only, it was only the past couple of years they really combined everything. It still was, I'd have wrestlers that I liked a lot, like Jericho or something, that would be on SmackDown, and I still probably wouldn't end up watching it because they're still doing recaps of what happened on Raw. They didn't treat it seriously, and they didn't take the brand split seriously, even when they tried to do it, so they just gave up with it. And I think if you're not going to have this giant talent pool, why even bother with it? So I'm okay with not having it. You know, if for some reason they had an abundance of guys jump ship, well, then we can talk about it.
But jump ship to where? I mean, that's the...
Well, there's still enough guys in Impact or whatever you want, TNA, that if they came over would be a big fucking deal. You know, if Angle and Bubba Ray and these guys that were pretty well known in their heyday in WWE came over, then you'd have enough big names where you could actually do something with a brand split and not feel like we better have Cena on every, you know, coming out every hour.
But again, that's just, you know, that's relying on star power from the past as opposed to creating new stars.
I agree.
Yeah. I think when SmackDown was at its peak during the brand split was that, right. I mean, pretty much right after it happened when, I think Paul Heyman was one of the main bookers, and he, I think I've heard it referred to as like the SmackDown 6 or something, and he focuses his booking on Benoit, Guerrero, Rey Mysterio, Edge, and the Guerreros, and then also Brock Lesnar. So SmackDown became like the in-ring wrestling talent kind of brand where you got to see good matches between those guys. But, I mean, they're all new stars. I mean, all of those guys weren't in the main event. Cena's main eventers until that era, and yeah, the ratings were lower than Monday Night Raw, but like now, like, I don't even know who's on SmackDown or Raw. I don't know who's which brand, because now Raw's the super show, and...
Well, SmackDown's a recap of Raw, essentially.
Yeah, there is no brand.
There is no brand. But you're right, Taylor, you're right. There was a time period where I was like, man, the better wrestlers are definitely on SmackDown, but it, in a way, they were kind of set up to fail, because there would be no, like, breaking news. There would be no upset. It never is going to happen because it was a tape show.
Exactly.
And things were edited. Yeah. It was so in a way they were kind of compensating by, all right, well, you know what? It's a tape show. So it's not going to have that same appeal as the legendary Raw show. So we'll go ahead and stock it up with the better in-ring performers. So I see why they did that. And I mean, it's probably the best thing to do at the time, but really, it's still begs the question of, if you got these guys that are so great, why waste them on the shitty show? Why not just put your best out there?
Well, and it's kind of, again, just a sign of the times. I mean, it's apples and oranges. I mean, it's amazing to me to think that in the 80s, in terms of the guys that were booked as stars, I think, you know, just off the top of my head, WWF at the time probably had, by a factor of two or more, like they had double the amount of guys that they were booking as stars, and they had 1 hour of television a week, whereas now they have five. To me, that's just amazing to think about. But again, it's for all these factors that we've discussed. I mean, you could still, you know, you could book surprises because you didn't have the ubiquitous access to information that people do now. I mean, now, you know, a wrestler walks through an airport and, you know, within minutes, somebody's got YouTube footage of it on, off their cell phone.
Yeah.
So
that's true. It's just, you're right. It is apples and oranges, different times, different eras completely. You've got these quick little 3-4 minute matches, and you got some of these, backstage sketches or promos that are a lot of times just big time wasters, or they're recapping things, which drives me crazy when you come back from a commercial break and it's like, we're going to have a pretty lengthy recap of what just happened. It's like, oh, you know, you're going to watch this again on SmackDown as well, if you happen to watch that show too. So it's, you know, I think, like I said, a lot of it, I do put on that whole ADD mindset of, this is like a YouTube audience that wants it right now. It doesn't want to wait for it. And it's the buildup stuff with jobbers and how you're going to do it. It's not the norm, and it's not what really is the product that they're pushing.
I'd also be curious to know, cause we're also, something I don't think we brought up yet is the whole PVR phenomenon. I mean, how many people of the viewing audience are actually sitting down and watching Raw live as it happens versus PVRing it? And then just, you know, like you said, in the ADD YouTube mindset, just fast forwarding to the guys that they like to see and skipping everything else.
We
that
must... here in America, we say DVR.
Well,
when you first said PVR, I was like PBR, like Pabst Blue Ribbon.
No, but that's a good point. Like, I think a couple weeks ago was the first actual 3-hour episode of Raw that I watched live. I wasn't able to fast forward the commercials, and it was the episode after Survivor Series when I was really waiting to see what they're now calling the Shield with Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins and Roman, whatever his name is, we're going to do.
the other guy, right?
Yeah, it's the other guy. And so I was waiting to see what they're going to do, and I sat through 3 hours to see them do the exact same thing they did the night before.
Yeah, it's
And it was
it's
just
tough.
Like, I couldn't get through it. I was like, I'll never watch a live version of 3 hours of Raw again. Like, I'll just wait till the next day and fast forward the commercials and whatnot. So
it's tough. You know what I'll do sometimes is I'll do work on my laptop or my computer while I'm watching Raw. And so that way it doesn't feel like I'm, you know, dedicating or wasting 3 hours of my life directly watching it. And then what sometimes happens, I'm like, oh shit, that looked pretty awesome. I got to go rewind it. And I want to pay attention for a little while. And cause 3 hours it's brutal. And it's so much. And you're right. I know exactly what you're talking about. Cause it was the same thing for me is when are these guys going to come on? They hyped up this interview with them. And yet you still had to sit through a lot of other bullshit before you got that. And then after you got that, so it was, yeah, it's tough. And I think in the DVR or PVR kind of world, 3 hours also works because if people are recording it, well, 3 hours doesn't take that much longer to fast forward through than 2 hours would have.
It just makes me wonder because back in everybody romanticizes about the Attitude Era. I mean, you really didn't have that option. You had to sit down and watch. And if you missed something, you missed it.
Yep. Well, it was an event. I remember watching, I know we're just segueing into everything here, but Taylor's the lucky one because he knows a lot about modern day wrestling. We can just kind of keep segueing. But I remember watching Raw in the Attitude Era, and it became a weekly thing with my buddy Bobby where I would go to his place. It was like this, to talk about nerdy now, we'd get like the same fucking pizza every week, the same, you know, drinks or whatever. And it was just, and we watched Raw from 8 to 10, and it was a thing. And it was just
8 to 10.
What is that? What 9 to 11?
Exactly. Well, getting Eastern time zone, only time zone that matters.
Yeah. Is that funny?
Yeah.
You got a joke about that? All right. We should feud over.
I'm capable of selling other people's jokes.
We're going to feud over time zones. Almost as bad as having jobbers in the modern era. But but it was an event.
So I can't crack on time zones, but you can get over on PVR versus DVR. Okay.
I just know it. I just
wanted to call that out.
No, I didn't know what you were talking about at first. You're like in a PVR world. I'm like, oh shit. I'm like, this is where my lack of finishing college is gonna come into play here. I'm like, is this? Yeah, right. I'm like, is this about like economics or something, or is this? You know, I'm like, then you're like, oh, record. I'm like, oh, fuck, DVR. Okay.
I'm living in the PVR era and I don't even know what it means.
Right. Well, we watched the Attitude Era and we didn't even know it was called the Attitude Era. So, I mean, but it was actually an event. We would watch it and it was something that we look forward to and we're like, we can't miss it. We got to make it. Oh, man, we better watch at the beginning because you know Stone Cold's going to come out and say some shit at the beginning, which we don't want to miss. And it was different. You're right. You did have to watch it. You did have to pay attention.
I think the booking was different, though, too. I mean, you just made a point. Now, like, you wait, you know, 2 hours through Raw before you see John Cena and CM Punk even come out. Like, I mean, lately, I think they've been better about having CM Punk cut the traditional promo in the beginning of the episode that ties into making you want to watch the end of the episode to get there. But when you booked the beginning, first 15 minutes in the Attitude Era, what made it so great is that first 15 minutes, you had to watch it.
Right.
And then whatever happened, it made you want to watch the rest of the episode till the end of it.
Yeah, I really hate when Raw opens with a match. It drives me crazy because it's I want to know what this teaser is to stay tuned till later on. And I want to have somebody talk about it. Now, it could be a quick promo that leads into a match right away, but really it should be the major storylines open the show and then close the show, in my opinion. But again, it's old school, I guess. Maybe it's just, you know, Chris, you mentioned earlier about advertisers and all that kind of stuff. And I work in the broadcast industry. So we kind of learned like the times have changed quite a bit, you know, in radio where I work, we don't have to say the call letters all the time because you have devices that monitor what people are listening to, as opposed to we better write down what we remember. And TV works the same way, where you have information that's sent back via your cable box or your dish that records you watching it and what you watched and how long you watched it. It's not about writing down a diary. Yep, I watched Raw every week for 2 hours. So times have changed. The metrics in tracking the product has changed. Of course, revenue and how that all works out, whether it's product placement. We see that in TV shows now because people DVR or PVR past commercials and they go right to the episode again. So there better be a can of Coke in that next episode. On Raw, you see, you know, computers, different things, different brands here and there. So it is a different world. And I think some of the old school mindsets still hold true about the, you know, the face and the heel and the storyline, but these things have evolved quite a bit. And it is in that hyper mode where it's, let's churn them out. Let's churn out these feuds over and over again. We might go back to them, but there's going to be some fresh feuds ongoing. I don't really see that changing.
So what did you mean a second ago? That was interesting about saying the call letters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm not in that line of work. So I don't,
well,
that was lost on me,
yeah,
but it sounded interesting.
It's really, it's the idea of the tracking of what people are listening to, just like with TV, whether it's TV or radio. Speaking from radio where I work in the past, the method of gathering ratings in the major markets was done on a diary system. People were chosen at random to write down what they listened to. And it's like completely flawed because it's, you're being asked to not only remember, but also possibly lie as well. And so DJs would say the call letters and constantly remind people, you're listening to the, you know, Rock 109.7, you know, the constant promos beating the station brand to death. Or if you're one of the big name, you know, Rush Limbaugh, Howard Stern, those kind of big, beat those names over and over again so people remember. Yeah. And then most of the major markets back in 2007 went to, from Arbitron diary rankings to, I'll try not to get too boring for people, into an Arbitron personal people meter. So it's a meter that people are chosen to wear and they get paid to do it because otherwise nobody would even do it. But they wear this meter and it picks up radio signals. And so it actually tells what you're listening to. No more.
That is crazy.
Yeah. No more of, yep, I listen to the Chris every single day from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. favorite morning show. It's like, nah, you listen to the Chris for some of the day. Then you listen to the rap station, then the rock station, you flip around. That's what you did. Cause there were commercials and you didn't want to hear commercials. So it tracks all that kind of stuff. That method is still flawed because there's not enough meters to go around. In the Chicago market where I live, there's currently 2,800 of these meters. Well, there's a population in the Chicago region, Chicago metro area, of about 10 million people. So there's close to 3,000 meters representing 10 million people. It's not really that good of odds. And when you get further out away from the city where my radio stations are, there's even less. In the county that my stations operate in, we have 13 of these meters and there's over 300,000 people. So one person represents like 20,000 people. It's crazy. So that's how this fluctuation up and down over and over again. So it's better than a diary system because you're actually getting what people are listening to. It's real, but it's still such a very, very small sample. Like if this was science, it would never fly. Because it's way too small of a sample, but it's only people. You know, my boss always goes, "Oh, it's no big deal. It's only our careers." You know, like he always says that when we talk about this. It's like you're right. It's not really a big deal. I mean, you know, plus or minus 5% could, you know, destroy everything. Whatever the possible error rates or whatever you want to call it is, it's no big deal. It's just our jobs. But that's kind of how that works. And going to TV, kind of apply the same logic and stuff to wrestling and Raw. You're watching on these DVR boxes or cable boxes or satellite dishes. And it's much better than radio because everybody's got one. It's not Taylor, you are chosen to put this little attachment onto your cable box. It doesn't work like that. It's going to transmit it regardless. So you don't have to remember what you're watching. You don't have to be chosen as a sampling size. That's actual numbers. So that's why you start to see in TV shows and stuff with more people doing alternate forms of advertising. May not be strictly spots. It might just be product placement. It might be, I know with my cable, I watch on-demand TV shows and movies where they don't let you fast forward when you're watching on-demand. You have to watch certain commercial spots. It's pretty crazy. Much like when you go see a movie in a theater and you got to watch 15 commercials before the previews even start, which is crazy. When I was a kid, it was, no, we're going to watch our previews, which sometimes that's what we went to the movies for, is to see the previews. And now it's about these ridiculously long commercials. So these, all these alternate forms of advertising go on because times have changed. Metrics of measuring ratings have changed. And so you got to adapt with the times.
Yeah. I know we're way off wrestling.
But yes. Sorry to everybody.
No,
out there.
No, it's really interesting. Cause the one, my wife likes that show Bones, the one with,
oh, with Angel. David Boreanaz. Yeah. Yeah. I'll always know him as Angel, but
remember, like, I watch it with her sometimes, and I've noticed before that every car in that show is a Toyota. Yep. Which, I mean, okay, that's fine. Toyota's paying advertising money, so you know the logo gets featured. I don't like it, but I understand why it happens, and it doesn't interfere. But I remember one episode about a year ago we were watching, and the two main characters are sitting in the front seat, and they're talking about the case that they're working on for the show, and then all of a sudden, the dashboard, like a beep comes from the dashboard, and the Angel says, "What was that?" And then Bones, the main character, goes into this 30-second commercial about the traction control. Like, they had a commercial for the friggin' traction control right in the narrative of the episode. I could not believe
it. Does not surprise me at all. And I know we're going way off, so if you want to cut all this out and whatever, use it for something else. But there's a show I watch. It actually was just on last night. This actually just happened last night. There's a show I watch called Suburgatory. It's pretty funny. It's a very, like, it's a girl kind of focused story, but because the characters are so just crazy, or it's actually, in a way, it's similar to like watching wrestling, because these characters are so crazy over the top. But it's about this girl and her dad. The mom is long gone, out of the picture, and they're from New York City, and now they live in this way over the top, fancy, rich suburb. So the characters are just crazy in the suburb. Like, they're at the country club. It's about what they're wearing, these new styles and these trends. And there was a really funny thing that happened where she talked about, she's like, "Oh, I'm spending time with, I found a new love of my life, you know," and it's this high school girl. And they're like, "What are you talking about?" It's like, "My new tablet." And she starts talking about, like, "Oh, it's so great. This keyboard comes out," showing this tablet. And then the commercials that happened during the show were for this same Microsoft tablet. And at first I was like, wow, this is pretty crazy. And then right towards the end of the episode, she started talking like a lot about it. She's like, "You know, it's great. The screen is this big," and it was done like tongue in cheek. It was a joke, but it still got the point across. So I kind of like that. It was almost like taking the idea of product placement and how people get annoyed, like you did with that, but then turning it around and saying, "All right, you know what? It's going to happen anyway. Let's actually write it in," because there's other stuff in that show that kind of breaks the fourth wall and does these different things that you would not expect in a TV show. And that's, you know, that was one of those. And it was pretty funny because it just happened last night.
That's hilarious.
Sorry about all that.
No, it's great. So let's wrap up the wrestling part. So yeah. Taylor, was there anything else you wanted to talk about in terms of jobbers or any other wrestling topic?
No, I think pretty much got my point across. More than anyone wants to agree with it.
What was your point, that jobbers are awesome?
Just that I think they could be used to as enhancement talent, exactly what they are, to enhance wrestlers that aren't necessarily the CM Punks and John Cena's of today.
I'll agree with you on one point. Jobbers would be very good as a way to enhance those wrestlers and move, you know, push them to the kind of, you know, learn people's, learn their offense, their moves, that kind of stuff, and show those episodes online and not on Raw.
Nobody's going to watch them there, though. That's the issue, though.
They do. That's called WWF Superstars. So right. Nobody watches it.
Exactly. That's how it should be.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they're...
It's not happening on Raw. It's not happening.
The developmental system of the WWE right now is FCW just recently turned into NXT. But those people are still wrestling in front of crowds of like 200 people or whatever.
That's good.
And
what's wrong with that?
They never get the exposure in front of a typical 10,000, 8,000, 12,000 people of WWE fans to see if they can work over that crowd.
Sure they do. It happens all the time. And the ones that don't make it get forgotten about. Think about like that last group of Nexus from a couple of years ago. Obviously, Wade Barrett and Daniel Bryan were standouts of that group. But there were a few that didn't even make the cut. You probably don't even remember right now. There were some of them that just they were given a chance. They didn't
Michael
really
Tarver.
Yeah, right.
No, but the original Nexus though, Michael the mask, Tarver, right? I think is the only one that's not currently in the WWE right now. The first Nexus, not the later one.
No, I know what you're talking about. All those guys, but like, I thought Justin Gabriel was great, and they're basically they're having him out on pay per views, but he loses every fucking match, so he's become a jobber. Even though he's got a lot of talent and possibly could be good on the mic. He's got a cool accent, so they could definitely play that up if they wanted to. But, you know, they're not really doing anything with him. So that he could easily be just cut off of TV one day. It wouldn't surprise me one bit because that's what
but
they do.
He could also become better and more exposed if he was wrestling jobbers and if he wasn't the jobber himself.
I don't see the current audience watching jobber matches. And you know what? The I was calling Goldberg, the Ryback thing where it's worked. You said it yourself. It was a slow start getting that going. It was brutal listening to like, look at this guy. And the Goldberg chants were bad and they never addressed them, of course, because that you can't really, you know, I'm surprised they didn't actually drown him out. And they've got the ability to do so if they wanted to and put in some fake pump, some fake crowd noise in. They could easily do that.
I'm sure they did at times.
I bet they did. And then, but it was a slow start and it's gotten to a point currently again, we're at the end of November, 2012 here where it's, he's over it. It's who knows why. Is it because he beat up two guys at once, you know, 5 weeks in a row? Maybe, probably not. Probably because he just says three words and pushes and raises his arms up and down like an action figure with a button on his back.
But you could use those jobber matches, a couple matches here that are in Raw. I'm not talking about all of them because you still have that main event of Raw that you're talking about throughout the episode that are going to get people to watch the entire thing. But maybe those wrestlers that aren't on pay-per-views every month are the ones that are wrestling the jobbers to slowly get over. And then they do get over or they don't. And then you send them on their way. But they get over, then you put them on the pay-per-view, like Ryback, and move them on up that way.
I think it correlates to the number of pay-per-views. If for some reason they scaled it back, I don't see it ever happening. If for some reason they scaled it back to six pay-per-views once every 2 months, then I think you might see some jobbers on TV. In its current state, I don't see it's possible. You've got too much storyline to cover in too short period of time.
But you could cover storylines through jobber matches just like they did back in the day. I mean, you'd have the heel come in, they cut a promo saying, oh, I'm going to beat up this jobber just like I am later at the WrestleMania when I wrestle, face wrestler here or whatever. And then maybe during that match, the face that's feuding with him is doing commentary or he'll come out and distract him and make the heel lose or what have you. But
in those old days, you're talking about mid-90s and before, I'm guessing. In those old days, you had feuds that lasted years, like over a year, some of them. How long did Hogan and Macho Man feud? And Hogan and Andre, that doesn't happen anymore. You got to move to the next one.
And I think it's to the detriment. I mean, how great was that feud? I mean, they started it in the closing moments of WrestleMania 4, and they didn't have, I mean, they were partners for a couple of months. Like, they didn't wrestle their title match, their singles match, until a year later. Like, I don't know. I just really think in terms of the pure storytelling aspect, I think less is more in those things because kind of to what Taylor said earlier, because we didn't see that match a million times when they did it, it was really, really something.
Well, I could see that happening in other promotions. I just don't see that happening in WWE ever again. I just don't see them. I think it seems like it would actually hurt this machine that it's become, but I could see that happening in other promotions. I could see that easily being done as a way to make those stand out different than WWE product, but I just don't see that happening. Because it hasn't happened in 15 years, right? 97 probably was the big switch over.
Longer than that, even.
Yeah, I mean, at least 15 years that kind of stuff wasn't going on.
Yeah.
So anyway, you proved your point, Taylor.
We're no further
no
kind of consensus for jobbers than we were when we started, but that's okay.
What we have learned is that Taylor's probably going to start going to pro wrestling school to become a jobber. And we're going to put him in a match and we'll see how he does.
No, that would be awesome. I mean, I fit the build. I could do it.
I think we're going to send you down to Mexico first.
And you know what? They're going to call me 123 Kid Junior and I'm going to become a huge megastar. And
you'll be the wrong. You'll be the 456 kid.
Actually, you're just the 1-2 kid. Just a two count. 1-2.
Just two. Oh, I never actually got the win.
Right. The 1-2 kid. It keeps jobbing. All right, Taylor. Thanks a lot for calling in, and thanks for being part of this first ever episode of Shoot Radio Lumber Shoot Match. Chris made it up. I don't like that title. For the record.
Well, thanks for having me.
Not true.
Maybe it was me. I don't know. Have to check the email archives. All right, Taylor, thanks a lot, man. Maybe if we have a second episode, we'll have you on again to not further another discussion.
You can find more great podcasts at lifestylepodnetwork.com.au.